Care Podcast episode number 50.
On this show, I talked to Mr. Davide Rossi from Gogo Nihon about the services that they offer and what it takes to start and run a successful business here in Japan. Hey everybody, welcome to the final episode of Tokyo Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Joe. And that's right, this is going to be the final episode of Tokyo Podcast because after this, I will not be recording any more shows. Now, why am I doing that? Well, a couple reasons. As some of you probably who've been listening for a while know, I've been pretty busy with my current position at Gaijin Pod, and I haven't been able to produce the show as consistently as I would have liked. And I don't like doing that. I don't like producing sporadic shows. I like to keep it quite consistent. And currently with my current work schedule, I'm not able to do that. And the other reason too, actually, is I have a couple other projects that I'm going to be launching in the next few months. And I see my schedule, my time just getting busier and busier. So the podcast, unfortunately, is going to take even further backseat than what it is right now. So I've decided that this is the 50th show. I think I've covered quite a wide range of topics here in Japan, and I think number 50 is a good number to end the show on. I might bring it back a little bit later on in the year, because I do enjoy doing the show quite a bit. I enjoy meeting the guests and interviewing them. So if some particular guest comes up that I think will be an interesting interview, I'll definitely produce a couple more shows. But for now, I think it's a good time to wrap it up. So on this show, I'm going to be talking to the CEO and co-founder of Gogo Nihon, Mr. Davide Rossi, about what is involved in starting a business in Japan. Davide has kind of a unique story. I think he's got kind of an ideal story for many people in that he came to Japan as a student. Actually, I think he originally came on vacation, and then he came back as a student, studied Japanese, and now he has started his very successful company. So I think a lot of foreigners who want to come to Japan, that's kind of their ideal. Let's face it, no one really wants to come here and teach English forever. And there's not a lot of other job options for foreigners. So coming here and starting a business is an option, but I don't think a lot of foreigners have the knowledge or ideas about how to go about doing that. So on today's show, I'm going to wrap things up with Mr. Davide Rossi talking about what it takes to start a business here in Japan. On today's show, I'm going to be talking to Mr. Davide Rossi, who is the founder of Gogo Nihon. Gogo Nihon is a company that specializes in helping students come to Japan and study Japanese. Hey, Davide, welcome to Tokyo Podcast.
Thank you very much for having me in your show, Antonio. You can cut it, right?
Can you give us a little quick background about how you came to Japan? You've been here a number of years. Did you come here originally to start your company, or what was your original interest in Japan?
Yes, I'll try to make it short. After I graduated, I went to London first to work in my field, which is IT. And after a couple of years, I found myself, you know, with the desire of learning an Asian language. I was thinking about Chinese and Japanese. I didn't really want to live in China at the time. And I had already a trip to Japan, which was great. So, you know, I had the desire of trying to live here and come to learn the language. So at the beginning, I came to Japan as a language student with a student visa with the purpose of staying here for 6 months. And actually now it's 4 years I'm here, so I guess, you know, I'm having fun.
When you first came here as a language student, was that the first time you've been to Japan?
No, it was the second time. I had a trip first with some friends of mine. And it was just amazing, you know, it just everything was perfect. It was like a dreamland for me. 3 weeks, Tokyo, Kyoto, Osaka, Hiroshima, Miyajima, which is a beautiful place, probably the best tourist place in Japan, I know. And then I came back to London, and I just felt like I want to go back here. I want to come back here and try to live here. I have a different experience.
And then when you decided to come back, what was your first thinking about coming back here? Did you want to go to language school? Did you think you'd want to start working? What was your original thought of when you decided to come back?
My original thought was to learn the language. So I would have learned the language and then get back to London to use the language skills to find a better job. And, you know, I was already be able to speak in English. Of course, I'm Italian, so Italian language. And then a third language, an Asian language, which would have been Japanese. So that was my original thought.
You came back the second time, you started at a language
school. Yeah, when I get to Japan for the second time, it was with a student visa. So I remember I came to Japan the 24th of June 2008, and my school started about 1 week after.
Oh, wow.
So I had 1 week to settle down, you know, check my apartment, which was not really good. That's why I thought to have a service like Ogo Nihon to help people to find good apartments when they come here. But, you know, I was so excited about Japan that I would have lived even, you know, under a bridge or something.
And when you started in the language school, what was it like learning Japanese?
Like learning Japanese in Japan, actually, intensively, everyday classes, is like going to high school, but studying only Japanese. So I was kind of getting like 7-8 years younger in 1 second. I felt like really time was going back, and my schoolmates were not people from my city, but were people from all over the world. It was fantastic. You know, you don't just learn the languages, you learn about worldwide cultures. I was studying with Korean, people from Holland, Egypt, Estonia, Sweden, and China. So it was such a great multicultural environment that, you know, helped so much to grow as a man. It's not just the language skill you learn there.
Right. And now that you start your company, you feel 7 or 8 years older.
Yes, exactly. I just got, time goes twice as fast as should be here. Exactly, yes.
So when you were in your school in this kind of multinational environment, did you have a lot of interaction with Japanese people?
When I went to school, unfortunately, again, there was no service like Gogo Nihon. So I couldn't really, at the beginning, get to interact with Japanese people. I remember I went out a lot with my Korean friends. I hung out with the Korean classmates a lot, to Korean restaurants. And of course, the Korean people don't usually speak English, the Korean people living in Japan. So we try to use Japanese as much as possible. But I kind of felt the lack of something to interact with Japanese people since the beginning. Then eventually I made friends, and after 3, 4, 5 months, I started to hang out with Japanese people.
Okay. And how did you find that, speaking Japanese with them? Was it different than speaking with your classmates?
Oh, yeah, because, you know, as you can expect, when you speak Japanese with your classmates, you have the same level because you are in the same class. And you start together, you learn the same grammar, same vocabulary, and you understand each other, no problems. When you go out and you speak with Japanese people, maybe they have a different educational background, speed of, you know, voice speed and things like that. It's a big challenge, but that's why, you know, I was here. I was here, you know, to be able to talk with everyone, basically, you know, to interact with any Japanese person I could meet.
Right. And then where did the idea for Gogo Nihon came from? I know you kind of mentioned that in the early days, it was difficult to find a school and an apartment. And I can certainly agree, because when I came here, even though we came through Gogo Nihon, we didn't actually use many of your services. We kind of did a lot of it on our own. And, some of it was a bit of a struggle. Where did the idea for the company come from?
I mean, the idea itself, it was really natural. As you mentioned just now, I came here as a language student and I had to do everything by myself. And Japan is a wonderful country. Service quality is really high and people are very kind. However, the step of getting here is still pretty tough. You know, the information is spread out. Someone says A, some other people say B. You never know where to trust. You know, information about the visa, the quality of the apartment is, of course, you cannot tell from a photo, right? All the photos look nice and bright and large. And then you can, when I came here, you know, it was a completely different place. But then you pay in advance, so you cannot even move that easily. So after just 6 months, I was in a language school. I was in Japan. I thought like there was a chance to make a service to help people to do what I did, to have this great experience of coming to live and study Japanese in Japan, but better. So making it easier and improving the quality of their life at the beginning, basically. So that's why we started to think about something that would help people to choose the right language school, for example, giving exact information about each school, each city, accommodation, you know, share house to save money, private apartment, dorm, and things like that. And most important, we thought that was really important to help people the very first weeks they arrive in Japan, opening a bank account, buying a mobile, and organize events, because people come to Japan because they want to meet Japanese people. They want to make Japanese friends. They want to speak Japanese with them. So what we do basically is, and as soon as people come here, we just let them come to some of our events. We do in Tokyo, and recently we start in Kansai, Kyoto, and Osaka. And we just introduce the new foreigner in Japan with all our Japanese friends that wants to meet foreigners. It's very easy.
Yeah, I can certainly agree that coming to Japan is an amazing experience. However, the procedures here are not as clear, especially if you don't speak Japanese. You know, like everything has got some kind of order, some kind of rule, some kind of procedure, but it's not clear to foreigners unless you can speak Japanese and you can ask them. This country is welcoming of foreigners, but it's not quite as open, I think, as many other countries that I've lived in. So in the early stages, in the early days, I think it can be very difficult, very frustrating. You know, you want to get going, but you need so many things. You need to get your keitai, to get your bank account, to get your address. And, you know, you kind of need to do all these steps, but you don't know how to get started. So when you finished your language school, when you graduated, is that when you started going home full time?
Not really. So I had this opportunity, which was to become an Italian language teacher with a working visa after like 4 or 5 months I was in Japan. So before I actually quit the language school, I had already this proposal, which I took because I was already 26 at the time. I had my master's degree in Italy, and I felt like, you know, it's 6 months of high school, I would say, type of life, it was enough for me. But, you know, there are people that study 2 years and they feel like they love going to school every day. I think it was really useful. Thanks to the fact I went to the school, I could actually be where I'm now, for sure. But at that time, after 6 months, it was a good time for me to accept this working offer, which was something I would never thought before. I graduated in computer science, work in IT in London, and then ending to be an Italian language teacher in Japan. It's kind of like random, I would say. But that, again, allowed me to be where I'm now. And so I worked for a couple of years as a language teacher. And then while I was working as a language teacher, because I had, you know, it's quite a well-paid job, and I could have enough free time to plan what would have been Gogo Nihon now. And everything started with me calling my ex-classmate, John, from Sweden, and having lunch with him once. And I remember like telling him all the troubles I had coming to Japan and settling myself in Japan the first months. And I wanted to help people to just have fun, learn Japanese, and have a great life in Japan without all this hassle. Just take out the hassle, and making a service that should have taken out the hassle. And John agreed with me because he said I had the same problems, exactly the same problems. So it was easy to start, and it was not easy to get to this point, because we worked 1 year to this service, contacting language schools, contacting estate agents, dormitory company, thinking how to make those events. But after 1 year, we finally launched the site. And since, you know, after a few weeks, we already got people inquiring us. And then when the first two students came to Japan actually using our service, they met with us and they say, thank you very much. Without you, it would have not been so easy. Without you, I may would have not come to Japan. When we heard that from the first students, we felt like, oh, this is working.
Hmm. Let me go back to a little bit to something you said earlier, because I think this might be of interest to a lot of my listeners, is that you taught Italian here in Japan, right? And I think many people, when they come here and they start looking for a job, preferably they're looking for a job on gaijinpot.com, but they automatically start looking for an English teaching job. It's kind of the thinking that the number one job here is an English teacher. But I've actually heard from other people that a friend of mine, for example, taught French here. And he did quite well because there's not a lot of other French teachers. So you taught Italian. So for someone listening who maybe is in Italy or Sweden or France, are there opportunities here to teach non-English languages?
There are definitely opportunities. However, I still think the English teaching job market is not just bigger, as obviously is, but there is there are more opportunities. It's easier to find an English teaching job than a French, Italian, Spanish, German teaching jobs.
Right.
You know, I have many friends of mine, people I know that are actually teaching Italian, teaching French, teaching Spanish. So it's definitely possible. But for example, for Italian people, maybe 50% or more of the students and workers that I know are actually doing restaurant jobs.
Okay.
While for English native English speakers, probably I would say the 80% are teaching English probably.
Right, okay.
So the
okay.
balance is a little bit different. It's right. still possible, but it's not as common as teaching English for a native English speaker.
Right, right. Okay, okay. That's interesting. But there still is some opportunities. I think maybe also too with private lessons, there's more opportunities as well, right? Because I think Japanese people are very interested in learning languages.
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, it's easy here like to post your ad on some sites or just go through connections. You go to some party event and right. you know you find this friend of a friend who's been interested in opera, and then you know it's just studying Italian, and then you end up teaching to her or to him in a coffee shop for 2,500 yen, which is about like $30 US,
yeah.
so which is not bad, you know,
yeah.
if you think in especially in Italy, $30 US for 1 hour lesson in your native language is a dream for many. So
okay, so good. So then when you talk us through kind of that year process. I'm interested in that year process, that when you had the meeting with John and you kind of laid the groundwork, the foundation for Gogo Nihon, what was that like? Because I think many people listening to this have the same idea or vision of coming to Japan and staying and starting a company. But we've always kind of heard that that's not an option for many people, that, you know, your jobs or prospects are limited to only English teaching, but you managed to get out of that. So can you talk a little bit about what was that like calling the schools? Were they hesitant to talk to you? Did they wonder what was going on? Was it easy? What was that like?
So first of all, I would say one of the key of our success, it was the people involved. I mean, me and John, we were, since the very beginning, we found ourselves to be complementary. We kind of compensate each other with our skills. You know, I could do things he couldn't do, and he could do things very well I had no idea how to do. So that was probably, if I would say one thing that made this happen, it was me and him working together towards this goal. And then, of course, the idea was a strong idea. I mean, it was a service that people needed. And that's why, you know, as soon as we launched it, people actually contacted us right away.
Mm.
The challenge we had with language schools, and I would say, I would not focus on the fact they are language school, I would say with Japanese people, right? Is the culture difference, this barrier, which is going to be there forever for a foreigner. Even if you learn the language, even if you look like a Japanese maybe, but you're not a Japanese person, you're always going to struggle with that because the values, the rules are different. And the key for me was going to the language school, because going to a language school doesn't just teach you the language, but again, teach you the culture. You get to talk with teachers, being, you know, in an environment where you get to know the Japanese culture. And being a gaijin in Japan, able to speak Japanese, that knows Japanese culture, it was the second key factor on that. Because when they see you going in their office proposing an idea, if you do that in English, maybe without exchanging meshi or exchanging, sorry, business card, or without doing certain things that Japanese people would do, it's like, oh, another foreigner. Mm. Okay, let's listen here, but, you know, it's another foreigner. But then when you do, you present yourself, you introduce yourself in a proper Japanese way, and you show them you are actually committed to stay in Japan a long time. That's why you learn the language, you learn the culture, and they definitely listen to you. If the idea is valid, then you've done.
Yeah, I believe I talked about that on one of my previous shows. I can't remember the specific guest, but we talked about that. Being fluent in even Japanese language does not necessarily mean you're fluent in the culture. And it's very important if you want to do business here to gain a very good understanding of both the language and the culture, even if you are doing business in English with Japanese people. So if you go to the school and the guy happens to speak English, you cannot switch back into your native style, joking English manner. You have to use kind of Japanese style, polite English when doing business with Japanese people. So I think learning both, if you want to do business here, learning both is vital. You mentioned barrier. What were some of the barriers that you encountered when you contacted these Japanese businesses?
So maybe the main barrier, which is also a stereotype, which is true, is like they never tell things straight to you. So you actually never get if it's, they're just really interested and super excited and very they respond to you so politely because they really like you, or just because they want to say, hey, please go out fast. And yeah, I'm telling you politely to go out fast. I'm telling I'm interested in order for you to finish and go out fast. So that's, it's hard to start. But then you know, it's like when you do this many times, you understand other things that means if they're interested or not, rather than just the word they use. So that's, again, is a key in being successful, or at least trying to be successful in doing business in Japan.
So in the early days, you might have called John and said, hey, we got that new school. They were so interested. I was in there in and out in 5 minutes and they really liked it. And then you never hear from that school again.
Oh, yeah, that happened. Happened for sure.
They really liked me. They brought me tea, yeah, and everything.
Just buy a new camera. The deal is done. Just buy it. We don't need to wait for the reply. And then we just end up with a camera and no video to make. Yeah.
But you know, it sounds like, though, that none of this really could have happened if you guys didn't speak Japanese, right? No way you could have done it only in English.
I think so. I still believe there are businesses you could do here without speaking Japanese, right? Mm-hmm. If it's a business, they actually need someone from abroad doing things they do well abroad, but they do good in Japan. They may just call English speakers, Italian speakers, without caring if they can speak Japanese or not. But our business, oh yeah, the fact we could speak Japanese was the key. Was on right. The third key factor, probably.
And I think also, too, as many people may not realize this, and something I didn't realize until I got here, is that your business model is actually kind of unique. And I think it's different than kind of many other service style models here in Japan, in that my experience is many of these service style models, the consumer has to pay for them, right? So when you hire a real estate agent here, you pay the real estate agent, not the landlord. If you hire an attorney and go for a consultation, even a consultation to see whether he will accept you as a client, you have to pay for that consultation. So your model of getting the schools to pay for your service so you could offer it for free to the user is totally different than I think what they're used to here. So if you weren't able to explain that well in Japanese, I think there's no way you could have grown the company at all, could you?
Right, exactly. I mean, I believe that, you know, the best way to start a new business from scratch, because that's what we did. There was no company like us in Japan. I had no experience in doing this. John didn't have any experience in doing this. So we started really, it's like the real startup thing, kind of thing, you know, with very, very low investment. Basically, we just bought a domain, you know, and then we did everything by ourselves. So I believe the only way to do this is to have clear the mutual benefit among the parts involved in this process, which are three parts, right? One is the school. which we helped bring in more and more Western students because they don't really know how to market their services. They are good schools. I mean, there are very good schools in Japan. I had the best time of my life in those 6 months because, you know, it was everything so fun and helpful for learning the language. I had the best time of my life in those 6 months. So the good schools are here, but just sometimes you don't really get it abroad, how is studying in Japanese in Japan. So we help them to market their services better to get more students. So they have an obvious advantage, more students. And for the student, they could have for free. So they would pay doing everything by themselves. But plus, using us, they have all those free things, all those free services like orientation, which language school or city is good for them, accommodation search, orientation in Japan, how to buy a mobile, opening a bank account, events. You know, we introduce those friends, Japanese people, help them to make friends since they come to Japan. And then they have our telephone number, mobile, email, even after they come to Japan, so we can keep supporting them. And then, of course, from us, instead of asking money from the students, we ask money from the schools, which are happy to pay because we bring more students, and we can pay our bills, basically. So it's a win-win-win.
Win-win-win. Was it difficult to set up a company here in Japan? Because, you know, Goku Nihon is not just a website. It's a legitimate company. And so was that process difficult? There's a lot of paperwork, like many people think, or what was that like?
Actually, opening a company in Japan is extremely easy. It's just like preparing some paper, and you could find information on the internet in English about which paper do you need. And then you just go to the registration office and pay for a kabushiki gasha, which is an incorporate company. You pay about $700, it's 60,000 yen. For the duty stamp, and then you have your company. You are the director, managing director. I don't know what's the exact translation in English. Sorry, but you have your company. You register your company to your home address if you want, so you don't even need an office. You can start the company with a capital of 1 yen, which is 1 cent, and it's extremely easy. On the other side, the difficult thing for foreigners is the visa. So when you want to make your business, then at some point you will need a business visa because you're not even an employee, you're the director, you're the owner of the company, right? And to make a business visa, it gets a little bit more complicated. They check you a lot because Japan is really strict with immigration, as probably most of the people listening to this podcast know. First of all, you need to invest at least 5 million yen, which is about 55,000-60,000 US dollars. Then you need to have a proper office, which could not be your home. It has to be an office like at least 25 maybe square meters. There are some rules. You need to provide photos, and they may come to check as well. They didn't come here actually yet, but you know, it looks like a proper office.
We're in a proper office.
Okay, thank you.
I can vouch for that.
But yeah, they could actually come to check, right. And you need to show photos and provide the address and everything. So they got the plans. They can see if it's a place which is supposed to be an office or not. Then you need to have staff, you know, like a Japanese staff. And all those things together make you understand that if you want to start your business in Japan, you must be very serious, which I think is a good thing. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm saying it's pretty hard. It was pretty hard to have everything set up, especially considering the fact we didn't have much capital at the beginning, so we had to find a way to put this money together and things like that. But it actually gives to Japan the thing that who start a business is very serious on it. You cannot just go there, I want a visa, I want to stay in Japan, and then you don't do nothing. No, because you need to pay the rent for the office, you need to pay the staff,
right,
you know?
Right. So someone, say, for example, on a work visa, they could go start a company, right? But if they wanted to switch from that work visa, say they're working for some other business, they want to switch from that work visa to their own business visa, that's when they have to have all these, the capital, the office, and all that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
Right?
That's the point. It's exactly like that.
Yeah. So what if you wanted to make more than one work visa? Because if you are, say you're working for another company, you have this great idea, you start your own company. And is there a certain amount of revenue that's needed to issue more than one work visa?
I don't know really the numbers exactly because, you know, our Japanese staff is actually taking care of those things, right? But I'm sure that they definitely check your yearly profits And depending, you know, how well your company is doing, you are allowed to hiring staff and making more work visa for your staff. Of course, if your company is not making profit, and then you want to hire 10 new people, and all of them are foreigners and they need a visa, maybe they, especially if your company is small, they will check that very carefully. But if you add like one person at a time, one a year maybe, and when your company is still making profit, you won't have any problems.
Oh, okay. Is there a certain limitation or rule about the number of Japanese you have to have working for you?
Again, this is not written anywhere. It just have to make sense to them.
Okay.
So it's kind of like depends on your business. Like if you do, for example, like translations, I think make perfectly sense. You have more foreigners than Japanese people, right? So it really depends on how the whole thing is. There is not like a written rule. Like you must have somewhere it's written that you must have 50% Japanese people. You must have at least 2 Japanese staff. Then I went to my lawyer and the lawyer said, "What are you saying? You know, it's not true." You know, the internet is a great tool for people to get information, but it's really deceiving sometimes, right? You find people that heard from a friend of a friend of a friend that translated with Google this information and got the fact that you must have 2 Japanese people in order to get a business visa and then your business going, which is not true.
Right, okay. That's because that's what I've always heard, is that you need at least 2 Japanese staff for every 1 foreigner. So if you want to add another foreigner, you have to have 4 Japanese staff.
That's a new thing. That's the first thing. Another one.
So that's not true. So if you're listening to this, that's not true.
Okay. It's really case by case. They have, you know, immigration has got staff and they analyze your request and they may actually talk with you, you know. People always think Japan is so strict, so unclear. It's not, you know, immigration is strict, it's true, but they actually talk with you. You know, when you go there and bring papers, if they find something on the spot which is not correct or they need more information, they actually call you right away and say, "Hey, look, before you go back, just provide me this other paper for your application." You know, that's what happened to me. So if you do things properly, the good thing about Japan, if you do things properly, you have good chances to have this done. If you do something weird, you have very low chance to have the thing done. So I like it.
Right. Yeah. My experience is the same too. I think that the paperwork, it's not quite as black and white as I thought. I think my experience, even with my own visa, is that they want to make sure that you're legit, that you're proper, that you're doing everything properly. So if they see that, and they will show you areas where you need to change or improve. It's not like they're just going to flat out say no. But if you are trying to be a little bit underhanded or trying to do something sneaky, then they'll catch it and then they'll, you know, deny you. So as long as you're doing everything properly, I think getting through the paperwork is not that difficult, and they are willing to help you. But what's next for Gogo Nihon? What's your guys' future plans?
It's hard to tell because the things are going well now, in the sense, you know, we have a lot of students coming and they require our services, they require our support, which make us very, very busy, extremely busy. So we have ideas, we have plans, we have goals, we have several options actually for us. We could move in at least 2 or 3 directions. But before we can do that, we need to perfect what Gogo Nihon is now, which means giving us a little bit more free time, keeping the same high quality service. So that's the very short term goal, basically. You know, we should really get more automation, improve our IT, still keeping the same high quality service. And then after that, you know, there are a couple of ways we could go, which I cannot really talk about it now because are kind of crucial steps to take, and I'm not even know which one of the 2 or the 3 we're gonna take, but it's gonna be fun.
Cool. Looking forward to it. Well, if you are listening to this and you want to come to Japan, I highly recommend going through the GoGoNihon.com service. It's how I came here. But that's great. Thanks, David. Thanks for coming on the show, and really enjoyed talking with you.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks again to Davide for coming on the show. If you're thinking about coming to Japan, I think one of the best ways to do it is as a student. Because the student visa is one of the easiest visas to get. And also, too, is once you start to learn the language, it's a really good way to learn about the culture of Japan and get an insight into what it's like to actually live here. And should you decide to stay, it's not hard to switch from a student visa to a working visa. And who knows, maybe one day you'll start your own business and create for yourself a very successful life here in Japan. So if you are thinking about coming here, I definitely recommend checking them out online at gogonihon.com. And that's it. That wraps up the final episode of Tokyo Podcast. I want to thank each and every one of my guests for being on the show and telling us your story. Also, a big thank you to all the audience members who tuned in every week. And for those of you who sent me feedback and comments, I really appreciate it. As I mentioned at the top of the show, I'm working on another project. I'm going to keep it under wraps for now, but in a few months, you'll probably start to hear from me online again. If you want to follow along my life here in Japan, you can do so on my Facebook page at Anthony Joe, where I post a lot of photos and videos about my time here in Japan. So with that, I am going to sign off, and thanks again for listening, everybody. I'm Anthony Joe, and bye-bye. So then tell us then, what's the future for Gogo Nihon? I mean, you got this system in place now where people from around the world can come here. They can pick a language school. They can go from Hokkaido to Okinawa and go any of the schools. They got all these mountains and beaches that they can check out.
That's from one of my video, okay? My accent was a little bit
What did you
wrong.
Call them?
Huh?
What did you call them?
Mountains and beaches. And not just once, right?
No. But we're filming in Fukuoka.
The worst part, that was one person, I don't remember his name or his nationality, it was with me listening to all this thing and didn't say anything. Do you know him?
I don't know.
From Canada.
I don't know.
You know, has a podcast.
I don't know.
No, okay.
But we were filming in Fukuoka. And Fukuoka is very famous for its nature. And Davide kept saying on film, Fukuoka is great for its mountains and beaches. I just didn't want to tell him because it was so funny.
Yes, thank you. I thought you were an English teacher, but no.
No, not at all.